to Shattering Myths. We're here with Amy and with her son David, talking about a remarkable encounter with a Christian teacher and her son standing up for what he's come to know to be true. And so you're telling me, Amy, that after you talked to this teacher for an hour and a half, that and were obviously very polite but truthful with him, that it was this time he who broke down, and he said, "Can you tell me how to be saved?"
Right. And he wanted material. He wanted another Bible, you know, Bible that I'm using.
Right.
I said, "Well, you know, I don't trust my Bible anymore."
Right.
So I told him, you know, the sources and you know what I discovered and your website and the you know the Hebrew and the coin and so on, you know. And he says, "Well, anything you can give me that'll help me to be saved." And I
wow.
and I said, "A relationship."
Oh boy, Amy! Wow! Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, Amy! That's perfect. Answer, because I even began in the beginning of the show before you called in and said that the Christian's issue in this particular case is that the first thing the Christian went to is, how can I be saved? And the answer isn't the question shouldn't be, how can I be saved? The question should be, how can I come to know Yahweh and how can I engage in a relationship with him? Because, as you know, salvation is a byproduct of the relationship. Oh, my goodness, Amy, I'm impressed. I'm impressed.
He looked at me and David like, "No, there's got to be more to it. No, it's a relationship. It's just going after him. It's a love affair. He just wants
right.
our love. He wants our attention.
Yes.
But Daddy, you know."
Yes.
And so, you know, we finished. There was a lot more said, but we finished and he said, "Please, please come over to my house, you and David, and I'd like to discuss this some more." But he was crying. He was crying all the way through.
Wow.
He even said, "You know, if you want to report my behavior to the administrator of the school, please do so." And I said, "Absolutely not. This is more important than your behavior."
Right. Absolutely. Oh, good for you. Wow.
You know, you didn't lay hands on my son, so you're okay.
Yeah. Right? Mom of the Century Award here.
You're okay.
Oh, wow. Amy, what I'm going to ask is that communicate with Willie, as you call him, and Willie has my email. Please communicate with him. I'm going to go to IQ Al-Rasuli, who's my regular scheduled guest for this segment of the Friday program, who's my good friend out of Europe. And so I need to go to him. I would really like updates on this story, and I really would love for you to share your relationship with, as you say, with Willie. We call him William the Elevator Man. But I need to transition now. But please, through Willie, communicate with me by email, and we'll schedule our next time together. This has been one of the most enjoyable and meaningful discussions I've had the privilege of conducting in the many years I've done radio. Thank you, Amy. Thank you, David. I look forward to talking to you both again and soon.
Bye. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. IQ Al-Rasuli, my friend, how are you doing? IQ.
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Oh, good. I'm sorry. Sorry for being late on the uptake here with you.
It's good to hear somebody else doing something decent, you know, not discussing Islam.
Oh, yes. And this was a story that would be right after your own heart, because what you did with Islam is you recognized there were internal contradictions in the religion which no reasonable person could answer. And so you came to recognize the religion was not only false and therefore worthy of your condemnation of it, but when you recognized all of the adverse manifestations of the religion and knowing that it was internally false, you engaged in this way. This family story, the religion is different. This one was Christianity, but this mother and son story is a similar path, although a less violent religion. It's a marvelous story. What I wanted to do today, IQ, is take a little different tack. It is my conclusion, and I think it is yours, that everyone on planet Earth should be intolerant of Islam, and that it, for those who are not intolerant of Islam are either ignorant, irrational, or immoral. And many of those who are not intolerant of Islam are all three of those things. But first of all, do we share that conclusion that to be accepting of Islam, to be anything but intolerant of Islam, requires a person to be either ignorant of what Islam actually is, irrational and unable to make a reasonable conclusion about the nature of the religion, or immoral, they know, and they're being purposefully destructive and disingenuous. Do we share that?
You're very kind. I would call them stupid. The reason I call them stupid, ignorance I associate with people who can't read and write or have no information available.
Yeah, that would be illiterate.
When you look at fact and reality and come to the opposite conclusion, that is stupidity.
Yeah. Well, I am willing to acknowledge that Islam is the religion for the foolish, that you have to be an absolute moron to be a Muslim. Thoughtless because of the internal contradictions in the Quran and the Hadith and just the despicable nature of Muhammad. It's impossible not to be stupid and be a Muslim. If you're a Muslim, you are stupid. That's just all there is to it. But there are a lot of non-Muslims who promote Islam as a great religion who are not stupid individuals. For example, the president before last was stupid, but the current president's not stupid. He's just grotesquely immoral. So it's possible not to be stupid and to still promote Islam, but then that requires such an individual to be grotesquely immoral. Would you agree with that?
Obama is grotesquely immoral. Obama is destroying America as we speak. He's done a fantastic job so far, and he continues for the next 3 years.
Yeah, now, as it relates to why we should all be intolerant of Islam, and you said that is probably too kind, and I originally wrote this question differently. Why everyone on earth should hate Islam is how I had the question posed originally. And I do think that it is valid that way, but I softened it to say why we should all be intolerant of Islam. Let's talk about the manifestations of Islam. Is it true that somewhere between 90 and 99% of terrorist acts committed around the world today are committed by fundamentalist Muslims?
100%, and I'm not exaggerating. I have looked it up. Any attack against infidels is 100% committed by Muslims and nobody else.
Yeah, now I actually wrote a book on this called The Islamic Terrorist Timeline, where I chronicled every terrorist act perfpetrated in the world from 1916. I think I concluded in 2004 because I just grew tired of the project. And in the beginning, it was about a third of the terrorist acts were perpetrated by Muslims, and two-thirds principally by communists, a few by others, but mostly by communists. And by the time we reached the 1970s, it's about 80% Muslims committing terrorist acts. And this is follows right through the birth of OPEC and the fueling, giving money to terrorists to enable them to export their terrorist behavior. And by the time that we reach the 1990s, it's well into the 90 to 95% of terrorist acts are perpetrated by Muslims. And by the time I got to 2004, it was over 99% of all terrorist acts perpetrated in the world were perpetrated by Muslims.
Correct. 100%. I agree with you.
So if terror is considered a bad thing, and terror is described as an armed assault on a civilian population for the purpose of causing that population to fear for their very survival and their willingness to acquiesce to the goals of the terrorist to prevent more terror, since most people would consider that killing and mauling civilians for religious or political means to be bad, and that Muslims commit 99% of terrorist acts today, would that alone be enough reason to be intolerant of Islam?
Well, I mean, really, the way you're putting it is so generous. Mm-hmm. You're so kind. To be tolerant of Islam is, as you said, utter stupidity and self-destructive. I don't know if you remember, we once discussed Karl Popper's axiom about tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
It says,
yes,
unlimited tolerance must lead to the disappearance of tolerance.
Correct.
If we extend unlimited tolerance, even to those who are intolerant, like the Muslims, if we're not prepared to defend a tolerant society against the onslaught of the intolerant, then the tolerant will be destroyed and tolerance with them. We should therefore claim, in the name of tolerance, the right not to tolerate the intolerant. Karl Popper, he made this axiom.
And yes, it's brilliant.
It's unbelievably perfect for Islam.
Yeah. It's I'm not a fan of anything in the Talmud, and I'm going to misquote this because I'm not a fan of things in the Talmud, but there is a citation in the Talmud that I have heard a number of times that says it is unmerciful to be merciful to the merciless.
Well, it's exactly the same thing as Karl Popper.
Yes, it's just a shorter, and it focuses on the consequence of intolerance, which is a lack of mercy. So just one more point on jihad terrorism before we move on to the next reason that we should be intolerant of Islam. The terrorists, those who conduct suicide bombings, those who commit armed assaults against civilians in the name of Allah and Islam, are they radical Muslims that are somehow have corrupted their religion, or are the Muslims who are engaged in jihad, particularly suicide bombings, fundamentalist Muslims? In other words, they're doing what Muhammad and Allah ordered them to do.
That's exactly what they're doing. There are no moderate Muslims. They cannot exist because the Quran says if you are a moderate Muslim, if you are not a jihadi Muslim, if you do not support jihad, then you are an infidel subject to death and destruction.
Right. In fact, it actually calls a Muslim who purports to be peaceful a hypocrite, which would be someone who is just fooling themselves.
Correct.
Yes, amen. And Allah is not tolerant of peaceful Muslims. What does he say about these hypocrites? Does he want good jihadist Muslims, fundamentalist Muslims, to accept them or to kill them?
To kill them and their ending in hell for the rest of their, for eternity in hell.
Right. In fact, does Allah even encourage jihadist fundamentalist Muslims to try to counsel the peaceful Muslims, to encourage the peaceful Muslims to accept jihad? Or is the moment they become a peaceful, moderate Muslim, they are to die?
The minute they are peaceful, they have to be killed. They have to be slaughtered because they are an apostate. And apostasy in Islam, the punishment is death.
All right, so we have reason number one to hate Islam, is the fundamentalist Islam leads to jihad, leads to terrorism, and that the religion as it was lived by Muhammad is responsible for 99.9% of the terrorist acts in the world today. How about war? Has Islam a history of war? When Muhammad lived, did he fight any battles? And upon Muhammad's death, what happened?
Muhammad fought at least 65, they called them battles. In fact, they were not battles. They were ambushes because they attacked civilians who were unsuspecting. They were either slaughtered, in fact, they were slaughtered, raped, enslaved, and their property taken over. Muhammad was a plunderer, a mass murderer, a serial rapist, and a child molester.
Okay, just on the fighting here, on the war, did Muhammad ever fight an army?
No. Never.
Did Muhammad ever fight a group of people who were prepared, trained to be to engage in a military battle, or were 100% of his targets civilians and 100% of the purpose robbery?
100% civilians and 100% plunder and robbery.
So this is a really despicable man.
There are no adjectives. In fact, there are adjectives, but you need to use 10 adjectives maybe 12 adjectives to describe a despicable person like Muhammad.
Okay, let's stay with war for a moment. You're familiar with what's called the Pledge of Aqaba.
Yes.
Muhammad left Mecca in shame following the satanic verses and the wild ass Barak ride to the non-existent temple in Jerusalem. And he meets with 12 pagans from Yathrib and elicits a pledge from them. Can you give us the gist of that pledge in the context of war?
Yes, the pledge was, as long as they support Muhammad and his desires and whatever he instructs them to do, he promises them the 72 virgins in his whorehouse version of paradise, plus if they survive the battle, they can have the women to rape, the children to be enslaved, and to slaughter the men. Yes.
Having read the Pledge of Aqaba, the Pledge of Aqaba reads as follows, that we pledge to wage war on behalf of Muhammad against all mankind. Have I summarized the, I don't think it's even a summary, I think I have quoted it precisely. Is that accurate?
Absolutely.
That's the precisely. It's called the Pledge of Aqaba, correct?
Right, correct. And
right.
One of the Arabs at the time, he said to the people, do you have any idea what you have just done? You have declared war against all humanity. 1,400
right.
years ago, they knew exactly
yes.
what it meant.
Okay. So we then have Muhammad enter Yathrib after he receives the Pledge of Aqaba for the first Muslims to wage war against all mankind. And whether they led, he inspired and led 65 or 75 terrorist raids. My count going through the Hadith was 75, but all acquiesced to 65 terrorist raids, all of which were against unarmed civilians for the purpose of stealing and raping and plundering. Was that the end of the Islamic war machine? That's the first 10 years of the era of Islam. But what happened when Muhammad died? Was there a thing called a war of compulsion?
Yes. For 2 years, Abu Bakr, the one who took over after Muhammad, slaughtered tens of thousands of Arabs into submitting to Islam.
Okay, so now that all of Arabia has by force of sword over they had die or become a Muslim, has surrendered to Islam, at least those who have survived, over the next 100 years, did this new religion inspire armed conflict, world war?
They conquered 3 continents, subjugated hundreds of millions of people, and murdered and slaughtered hundreds of millions of people, and enslaved hundreds of millions of people.
So a religion in its first 100 years, that whose prophet, and where you put prophets in quotes since he never got a single prophecy right, the founder of the religion leads 65 to 75 terrorist raids against innocent civilians, raping and plundering them, and whose the first Muslims then lead a world war against 3 continents, murdering and plundering and raping and pillaging hundreds of millions of people. Why is it that that religion still exists today? Why isn't that been an outcry against barbarism and war been sufficient to say, if this religion continues to exist, it'll kill all of us?
This is a question I have not been able to answer after 30 years of research.
Has there ever been any peace in Islam?
Never. By the way, the Muslims have never been victims, ever. In 1,400 years, Muslims have always been, and even today as we speak, are the victimizers. But they always pretend that they are the victims.
Yeah, for example, in the mythical people known as the Palestinians, they consider themselves being victimized by Israel occupying their land. And yet, I've studied this mythical people known as the Palestinians, and when they were incorporated into Israel as the Israelis offered them to be citizens of the country, that they were the best educated, the freest, the healthiest, and most prosperous Muslims in the world. Is that not true?
This is true.
And so they victimized themselves when they decided to call for killing Jews as opposed to benefiting from them, that they brought the hell that they currently endure upon themselves.
Absolutely true. By the way, every Arab country which chucked out the Jews that they had today suffered the most Jews within itself. I come from Iraq. There used to be 150,000 Jews, descended from 2,500 years. There are no Jews left in Iraq. And in a way, God blessed them by having them chucked out. Because had the Jews remained in Iraq today, they would have been plundered, raped, and slaughtered.
Right. But they were all expelled, weren't they?
All of them were expelled, every single one of them.
Yeah, same thing is true with Iran.
Yes, and Egypt, and Morocco, and Algeria, and Tunisia, and Libya, and, and every one of them now is in hell.
Okay, so we're dealing with Muhammad being a warmonger, leading an inspiring 65 to 75 battles during the first 10 years of the Islamic era, and the world's most horrific world war being perpetrated by the first Muslims, raping and plundering and butchering on three continents in the first 100 years following Islam's creation. And even today, as we look at world wars and wars around the world today, where are those wars being fought?
Every single country on earth is suffering from Islam, from the Philippines to Indonesia to Afghanistan to Pakistan to Iraq to all the way to the Atlantic Ocean and then beyond the borders of the Atlantic Ocean into America, into Europe, China, Russia. You name a country, wherever there are Muslims, there's trouble.
And in terms of the out-and-out conflicts, I mean wars right now, it's all Islamic countries, isn't it?
All Islamic, every single one of them.
Right. And right now in Iraq, your home country, there is a civil war that is has taking place between Sunni and Shia Muslims, correct?
Well, with their deaths, every day, literally every day, I get emails of 30, 40, 50 dead. Forget about the wounded. These are only the dead. Every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Yep. And same thing is true in Syria. Same thing is true in Yemen.
The same, exactly. In Syria, in fact, it's even worse, because in Syria, in 2 years, Bashar al-Assad and the others, they each killed from each other over 120,000 civilians.
All right, so war is and the sponsorship of war is a reason to be intolerant of Islam. Let's move on to sexual abuse. In Islam, is there gender discrimination?
The most incredibly racist group of people on earth are Muslims against women.
Yeah, they are. They in Islam, while the Quran says that a woman's worth half of a man, that really isn't an accurate accounting, is it?
Not at all. A woman in Islam is one little step higher up the ladder of evolution than domestic animals.
By the impression of a Muslim man, not by truth. We'll return with IQ Arasuli and Shattering Myths in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're here with a man that I care deeply about, that I respect a great deal. His name is IQ Arasuli. He has written a series of books called Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. We're having a discussion as to why everyone the world over should be intolerant of Islam. We've gone through the fact that it promotes terrorism, that it is the leading promoter of terrorism in the world, that it is warmongering and has pillaged the world in terms of its conquest. And now we're on sexual abuse. We began with the gender discrimination that Islam treats women as if they were animals. And that the problem there, my friend, is that Muslim men have been encouraged to be Muslims because they can treat women as if they were property, that they don't have to respect them, they don't have to treat them well, they can do whatever they want, that a woman in Islam exists simply to satisfy a man.
Absolutely right. It's only for his pleasures. By the way, according to the hadith, also in the Quran, a Muslim man can have sex with his wife anytime, anyhow, any way he chooses. She has
and he's not limited to one wife. He can have four, right?
Correct.
And one of those wives can be a Right. And one of those wives can be a rotating position so that it can be open-ended. So for any night, he can go off and have as much sex as he wants with concubines or whores, prostitutes. And during that night, she is in the alternate position where he can go through as many as he wants.
Correct.
And a Muslim man can do anything he wants to a Muslim woman or to a Christian woman, but a Muslim woman cannot marry a non-Muslim man.
Yes, that's interesting. When I debated this with some Muslim mullahs, they say, because they're going to remove Islam from her, from a Muslim woman. Why is it all right to remove the Christianity and Judaism from the Christian or Jewish women, but it's all right, it's not all right to remove Islam from the Muslim women. I do not know. But of course, this is the...
It's just discrimination. The purpose is discrimination. It's control. Now, most people in most civil societies consider the single worst crime that can be perpetrated is pedophilia. What does Islam have to say about pedophilia?
You can have a child, even 1 year old. Oh, by the way, Khomeini, in his book, he wrote that one also.
Yeah, in fact, Khomeini's Little Green Book has a chapter devoted to the proper approach to pedophilia, and it says, a child as young as 1 year old is perfectly fine, and that there are essentially no constraints on acts of pedophilia. Now, why is Islam not only accepting of, but actually says that it's appropriate for an adult, someone who is even in their 40s or 50s, to have sex with a child under 10 years old? Why is it that Islam would actually advance this most heinous of crimes?
Because Muhammad did the same thing. Muhammad, at the age of 50, they call it marriage, of course not marriage, rape.
Right.
He had an affair or sexual encounter with a girl of 6 years old called Aisha. He consummated so-called marriage by penetrating her. He was 53, she was 9 years old. That's why Muslim men would do anything to find a girl of 9 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, they followed their prophet's example.
Absolutely.
Now, as we turn to rape is an interesting concept in Islam. The Quran actually says that it's appropriate for a Muslim man to have sex with his slaves. Having sex with a slave is rape. What happens in Islam if a Muslim man rapes a Muslim woman? What's going to happen in the aftermath of that?
The Muslim woman, if she objects in a court of law, they will find her guilty of bad manners or bad morals, and she will be stoned to death, not the man.
So the man is exonerated and the woman is prosecuted?
Absolutely.
And even if the woman being raped is the man's daughter, the Muslim man is
exonerated,
and the Muslim woman will be prosecuted.
Correct. Yes.
That's a pretty disgusting.
It's happening in all over the world, all over the Muslim world. I mean, it's not because you are saying it and I'm saying it. Anybody can Google it, and will find out thousands upon thousands of cases in Europe, in America, and in the Muslim world. So it's not only in the Muslim world. It's where Muslims are in Europe and America doing exactly the same thing.
Okay, let me go one more step before we leave sexual abuse as a reason to be intolerant of Muslims. There's a concept called female genital mutilation, where a mother or father will remove the clitoris of a young girl so that she will never be able to enjoy sexual pleasure, and they will actually sew up portions of her vagina so that while she is young, it is impossible for her to lose her virginity. Does this take place in meaningful numbers in the Islamic world?
Huge numbers in the Islamic world, yes.
In Egypt, for example, isn't it in the 95% range?
Huge, yes. Because the mother of the child, she has been tormented. And she would do the same thing for the child because she believes this is the right thing to do. This is the tragedy. They honestly believe this is the right thing to do because they've been indoctrinated so deeply
right.
for 1,400 years to believe that this disgusting, despicable act is divine.
Right. So this woman who called into this the show earlier, who went out of love to defend her son because her son was abused by a teacher, the opposite is true in the Islamic world. The mother will abuse their own daughter.
Absolutely. Yes.
It's despicable, isn't it?
It is. By the way, this is why Muslims, 1,500 million of them, are the least productive, least inventive, least creative in human history.
We'll get to that in a moment. There's another reason to be intolerant of Islam. So sexual abuse, is there this female genital mutilation, which you've said and I have studied, is extraordinarily prevalent in the Islamic world. And in many Islamic countries like Egypt, it's in the 95-plus percent of little girls that are mutilated by their mothers. Is female genital mutilation common outside of Islam?
Yes. Outside of Islam, no.
No.
But there are Muslims outside the Dar al-Islam, yes.
So if we were moral, compassionate individuals to protect little girls from being mutilated by their mothers, to protect women from being raped by men, to protect little girls from being savaged in a pedophilic act, we would have to be intolerant of Islam.
100% agreed.
Okay, so we have now three reasons, beyond the fact that it's not true, to be intolerant of Islam. Jihad, terrorism, war, and sexual abuse. All right, let's turn now to the legal system. It's called Sharia law. Is there any merit to Sharia law, or would you like to share with us what are the ramifications of a nation embracing Islamic law or Sharia law?
Well, in a nutshell, Sharia is hate-mongering, warmongering, misogynist, racist, duplicitous, disloyal, vile, and hence totally ungodly. I don't have to add more to that.
Okay. Sharia law is based entirely on one man's words and deeds. Is that correct?
Correct. Muhammad.
All right. So 100% of Sharia law is based upon Muhammad's statements and Muhammad's actions. Was Muhammad a pedophile? So is pedophilia accepted in Sharia?
Correct.
Was Muhammad a racist?
Yes.
A rapist. And so rape is accepted in Islam. Was Muhammad abusive of women in general?
Yes.
So you can discriminate against women in Islam according to Sharia. Was Muhammad a violent and ruthless terrorist?
Yes.
So you can be a terrorist in Islam. Was Muhammad a thief?
100. A thief is a very nice name. Yes, he was a thief.
Okay.
But of the first order.
Okay, was Muhammad a kidnapper?
Yes. And a
was Muhammad
taker.
Yeah, was Muhammad a slave trader?
Oh, yes.
Did Muhammad acknowledge that not only he lied, but that it was appropriate to lie?
Yes.
Did Muhammad order Muslims to fight and kill non-Muslims until the only religion on earth was Islam?
Yes.
So if you have a law based upon that man's words and deeds, it's going to be the most savage, punitive, primitive, perverted legal system on earth, correct? It's going to exonerate everything that is evil and condemn everything that is good.
Yes, and it does it as we speak today. It happens.
Does Islam,
all over the world.
Did Muhammad tolerate criticism?
Of course not. He was a megalomaniac. He can't tolerate criticism.
And so if someone criticized Muhammad, what did he have his first Muslims do to them?
Cut his head off.
Right. So was free speech tolerated under Sharia law?
Never.
Did Muhammad tolerate somebody choosing a whatever religion they wanted?
No. Apostasy is death.
Okay. So in Islam, is there freedom of religion?
No freedom of religion, except Islam.
When Muhammad created Islam, did he say that Allah has decided the religion for you and there is no choice in such matters?
Yes.
So there is no free will, there is no freedom, there can be no democracy under Sharia, is that correct?
Impossible. Democracy and Sharia is an oxymoron, a contradiction in terms. Cannot ever exist.
Okay, so unless you're a fan of rape and pedophilia and thievery and kidnapping and the slave trade and terrorism and lying and thievery, unless you're a fan of those things, you have to be intolerant of Islam because that's what it's going to impose.
Correct.
All right, so that's a pretty good reason to be intolerant of Islam, would you say?
I agree 100%. Of course I have to say.
All right, now, let's go to breaking treaties. You know, the world lives today on people making agreements, whether those agreements are business agreements or those agreements are political agreements. But there are agreements that people form with other individuals so that the behaviors can be productive, so that we can work together. Does Islam have a thing called the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, and does it allow for Muslims to renege on any treaty that they form?
Any and every treaty they form with an infidel, they can break it anytime they want.
We're going to return to that thought when Shattering Myths continues after the commercial break. We're returning at the final segment with my good friend IQ Al Rasuli. And what we're talking about may just sound stunningly obvious, but for us to have a vocal record of this that can then not only be posted in the archives of this program, but posted around the Internet, for people just to listen to, just the utter simplicity of all of this, to understand how you have to be either ignorant, irrational, or immoral to be anything other than intolerant of Islam. That's what we're talking about here. You lose your humanity if you're not intolerant of Islam. Now, we're right now on broken treaties. And broken treaties are far more than just promises not to engage in battles. The United States, for example, just signed a six-month agreement with Iran on the development of nuclear weapons. Now, Iran's leaders are all Muslims. Is that correct?
They are Shia Muslims, yes.
Okay. Now, does the Shia Muslims read from the same Quran as do Sunni Muslims?
Yes.
Is the same set of hadith? You and I have talked about Tabari having written the first history of Islam and Ishaq having compiled the first biography of Muhammad from hadith, and Tabari and Muslim having compiled the first topical arrangements of hadith collections. Do the hadith appeal and apply both to Sunni and Shia Muslims?
They can, yes.
In Shia Islam, they have this whole myth of the 12th Imam, and there's this mystical additional hadith that come from not companions of Muhammad, but much later that they relate to. But they don't discount any of the five oldest sources.
Correct.
And the same thing in Sunni Islam. What the thing is funny, of course, about Sunni Islam is they discount Shia sources, and yet all of the Sunni sources, including the Quran, were compiled under the influence of Shia Muslims during the time that Shia Muslims were in control of Islam around today's Baghdad.
Correct. Under the Abbasid Empire.
Yeah, it's really funny. That's the first written copies of the Quran and the first written copies of any of the hadith material were all compiled under Shia rule, and yet they are accepted universally by Sunni Muslims.
Correct.
Yeah. So both in the Quran and the hadith, there is an enormous amount of detail on this thing called the Treaty of Hudaybiyah.
Yeah.
And the Treaty of Hudaybiyah says what, IQ?
The treaty was between Muhammad and the Quraysh tribe in Mecca.
Uh-huh.
And it's supposed to last for 10 years of peace.
Right.
But, of course, Muhammad, within a year, he broke it.
So the nature of the treaty was that Muhammad came down toward Mecca to conquer it, but he thought he got cold feet. He thought he had insufficient Mujahideen, troops to attack a mud village that had absolutely no army, didn't even have a police force. And he thought he got cold feet, he got afraid, and so he, rather than attack, decided that he would acquiesce to a treaty, and he pledged, since he had kidnapped Meccans, enslaved Meccans, killed Meccans, and terrorized Meccans, and robbed Meccans, that for 10 years he wouldn't do any of those things. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. That's the Treaty of Hudaybiyah. And then the following year, Muhammad comes down. By the way, on the way back, since Muhammad's goons were used to bloodlust and assaging their bloodlust, they attacked the farming community, Jewish farming community of Kabar on the way back, and which was probably Muhammad's most ruthless terrorist act.
Correct, again.
Okay. So then after assaging the bloodlust and covetousness of his barbarians on Kabar on the way back, Muhammad needs new prey. He's overhunted Jews. There are no more Jews to hunt and kill and rob in Arabia. He goes back to Mecca, the very place he had to leave in shame following the satanic verses and the wild ass ride on the Barak to the mythical temple. And this time he has sufficient men under arms. And he conquers the place. But that was a complete violation of his treaty, was it not?
Of course, he found excuses, which were not true, to violate the treaty. And the Muslims have always done that. And the mullahs today, with Obama, they would do exactly the same.
Okay. And by the way, the excuses were irrelevant, because what is the opening of the ninth surah of the Quran say relative to Muhammad's ability to break his treaty?
قَاتِلُ الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ. Kill those who do not believe as you do.
And also that any treaty made between Muslims and non-Muslims is not binding on the Muslim.
Absolutely.
So that is another reason that we should reject Islam. On tomorrow's, or next Friday's program, IQ, I want to look at the other one you have mentioned many times. Abject poverty is another reason to be intolerant of Islam. Thank you, Mike.